KALW.
A few weeks ago, we had just shooting after shooting. That was hectic.
Homicides are up in Oakland this year, surpassing last year's count.
Everybody is fighting for monies. If somebody feels like somebody has a few more dollars than them, they're going after them.
An anti-violence activist gives his take on what's driving these killings. Then we hear from an East Oakland teenager who's a sensation on the drums.
People were definitely shocked when this little person would come out from behind the big drum set.
And from Uncuffed, how yoga brings people together, even in prison.
You're black, white, Mexican.
Everybody, yeah, doing yoga on the handball court.
United Nations all with their ass in there.
Oh, you want to hear this. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. This year, Oakland has seen a surge in homicides. For the first time since 2012, Oakland has reached over 100 cases. Crises like this keep Oakland native Glenn Upshaw busy. He's the leader of Youth Alive's Violence Interruption Team. A violence interrupter is a person who tries to peacefully resolve conflicts in the community. Sometimes people call Glenn and his team before the police. Glenn is someone who brings a lot of experience to mediations, as someone who committed crimes in the past and lost loved ones to violence. He talked to KALW's East Oakland reporter Junaid Darden about why he thinks there's been a rise in killings this year.
How did you get into this work?
Being from the streets, I was involved in some criminal activity back in the days. Come up to 2004, I end up catching a case and I was looking at some serious time. And so I felt like that was my warning. If anything else happened, that I would be gone for the rest of my life, locked up or hurt or dead. But come 2012, I had the opportunity to join an outreach organization. And in that, I found out that it's not so hard to intervene and make a difference in the community.
The crime today is really high in Oakland. This is the first time in 7 years that Oakland has reached over 100 homicides. What are some of the reasons from your perspective?
For one, I know this pandemic has altered everyone's life. Everybody is fighting for monies. If somebody feels like somebody has a few more dollars than them, they're going after them because the bits of hustling that they were doing has been limited now even more.
I'm guessing because of the pandemic, and I'm thinking like why the hustler is affected, right? Because if I'm out of a job and I'm not going to my dealer for whatever I'm getting, you know, illegally, then their money dries up. So then that's where some of the beef is. And it's causing violence. So the interim police chief, Susan Mannheimer, she says in a quote, she thinks the rise in violence is coming from early release of prisoners and the inability to hold people in jail for lower level crimes, anxiety. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't know that it's from the lower level criminals that was released. I personally don't see that. It could be. I don't know what the statistics are.
Well, let me give you some more, too, some other comments from the police department and from the mayor. You know, they've said that prior years we've seen a decrease in because of violence reduction programs like Operation Ceasefire. But those programs involved meeting in person. And because that's not happening because of the pandemic, then they can't do that work, which is work that which you do. Also, too, firearms. There's been an increase in people having firearms. Thoughts on that?
I agree with the in-person has put a hamper on services, even though many organizations are still meeting in person for some of the highest risk youth. And guns has always been a problem.
Right. What about youth? Social workers, you know, they're saying in law enforcement, people are bored. You have young people that are bored. They don't have nothing to do. And what's that saying? An idle mind is the devil's playground.
That is a big portion is people are bored and it's no real opportunities. It's nothing else for them to do but find criminal activity.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to bring this up real quick because I had done a case study last month, but I just wanted to run some numbers by you. It's interesting because we were at 94 homicides the end of October, but 30 of those was 36 plus and 6 was 13 to 17. So from my point of view, it was more older folks that was killed here.
So you have old, slightly older people, going back to what you said about hustling and they trying to make ends meet. Interesting. As far as Oakland violence, you know, when I was growing up, when you were growing up in Oakland, we didn't really have gangs. It was more turf. Now it's gangs, and gang culture has changed too.
It definitely has. I feel a part of it is like a lot of folks went to jail in the 80s. A lot of people got addicted to crack and people got sentenced, I feel, unfairly in a lot of cases. So that really broke up the family. So the turf started going away. The turf used to be more regulated and it was rules to the game, far as what you could or couldn't do, or somebody, you had somebody to say something when you really just totally out of line.
So you had clear leadership within the turf.
You did. Mm-hmm. So all those guys got taken away, put away for a long time. And as I say, it broke up families, but then it left a lot of youth to fend for themselves in the streets. And I think that's where this gang mentality got set up throughout the years. A lot of youth were running with other youth without any leadership and start creating these gangs.
And how does that affect your work, that they don't have that hierarchy, you know, like this is the top leader? And
it becomes difficult because we have to search and search, and we have to find somebody who they may look up to.
Because back in the day, you would go to the gang leader and talk to the gang leaders and resolve it. But because there's no clear leader, then you have to go to somebody that they look up to. With all that's going on, what is your workload like? I can only imagine.
It's heavy with Youth Alive. It's a total of 8 of us. We're spread throughout all of Oakland. I have to give them all the credit because they're on the ground and they respond to just about every shooting in Oakland, every homicide, every bedside visit to make sure no one else gets hurt. A few weeks ago, we had just shooting after shooting. Mm-hmm. That was hectic. And in another case, when the pandemic first started, we had some shootings and we were supposed to be off the streets, but the guys and the girls showed up and they made a big difference early on, because I know it could have gotten a bunch worse.
That was Glenn Upshaw, lead violence interrupter for Youth Alive. He spoke to KLW's Janae Darden. You can go to our website to watch Janae's award-winning documentary short, Where is East Oakland? Go to klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Motown has the Jackson 5, but Oaktown has its own Jackson family band. They're called Jax. The Haitian-American sibling trio are all teenagers. They split their time between East Oakland and Port-au-Prince, Haiti. Living in two countries influences their sound. It has elements of soul, hip-hop, rock, and Caribbean music. Their debut album is called The Glow Up. Io Jackson is the youngest member of the band, and she captivates audiences with her mad drum skills. Oakland Voices reporter Tony DeKeepa has this story on the girl wonder musician.
1, 2, 3, 4.
On a scorchingly hot evening,
deep in East Oakland, I'm hanging out in the small home recording studio of the Jackson family. There's no air conditioner, but the heat doesn't stop the family from working on their new album. The youngest Jackson, with her plain gray t-shirt, gray shorts, and bleached blonde afro, is killing it on the drums.
My name is Ayo, I'm 14 years old, and I'm from Oakland, California, in Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
Ayo has been playing the drums since she was 7 years old. The family splits their time between her mother's home country of Haiti and her father's hometown of Oakland, where she fell in love with drumming.
I grew up around my dad and family friends playing drums and all sorts of instruments, and they kind of grew on me. I play the drums every day, think about drums every day, other things I can do. I look into other drummers to learn new things and try to expand my skill set.
Women, let alone teenage girls, are rare in the professional drumming industry. According to a 2010 study of university music programs in the U.S., only 18% of undergraduate percussion students were women. In graduate school, that number dropped to 16%. Without much representation in the music industry, drummers like Ayo are a breath of fresh air, surprising audiences.
Because while I was the youngest one in the group and playing the biggest instrument, and a lot of times they couldn't see me, which I found funny. So people were definitely shocked when this little person would come out from behind the big drum set.
Even though she's only 14, Ayo has been breaking stereotypes for several years now. She's locked in the pocket and has solidified her improvisational skills. She plays in a band with her brother and sister, who are both sitting in the living room on the bottom half of the bunk bed that they share.
My name is Amon Jackson. I'm 17, soon to be 18, and I'm from Oakland, California. And I play bass, sing, and rap. Jax is a band that I do with me, my sisters, and my dad. And we've been doing it for about 5 years now. We're getting close to six, which is dope.
My name is Sudan. I'm 16, from Oakland, California.
I play guitar and I sing.
Ayo Jackson is my little sister, my crazy little sister.
Ayo says she couldn't ask for better bandmates.
That's actually very, very fun. We are family, so there is, like, you know, sibling things that everybody with siblings will understand. But aside from that, it is really fun.
The Jacksons are a close-knit family, and that's a good thing because they currently live in close quarters, a two-room in-law unit that doubles as their recording studio.
Yeah, so we have this bunk bed, bottom bunk is Sudan, top bunk Amon, my mattress is underneath, and then on the top bunk we have a folded up futon mattress that my parents sleep on.
In 2015, the family moved from Oakland to Haiti in order to get in touch with their heritage. Their mother, Sandrine, who also acts as the band's communication director, stylist, and nutritionist, was born and raised in Haiti. However, the band has been getting gigs throughout the U.S., sharing stages with huge acts like Sheila E., Tony, Jennifer Hudson, and Yo-Yo Ma. The band's success keeps the entire family commuting back and forth between Port-au-Prince and East Oakland. Unfortunately, when they moved to Haiti, they rented out their house to a friend who was in need of a place for his family. So now, when the Jacksons return to Oakland, they have to cram into the in-law unit in the backyard.
It's definitely, definitely very cozy living. Every time I turn around, there's one of them right there. But yeah, I love them.
Living in Oakland is tight, but
being in Haiti has been great. Being around my mom's side of the family is really cool. We live actually with my grandma, and on the same property we have uncles and cousins, so it's really nice being able to be around that side of my family for a part of my life.
Ayo studies Haitian drumming with her siblings and says that she is also learning a lot about herself. And Jax plays gigs out there too.
When we perform out there, everybody else that is in the lineup has traditional Haitian music, like Gompa and what you would hear on the radio out there. But when we perform there, we have a mix of everything that you could hear out there and stuff here. So I feel like they don't really know what to do with our musical sound yet, but they will eventually.
The siblings all participate in writing Jax's music.
When we're having writing sessions, we write what we're thinking about or something that comes to mind that we all can agree and expand upon that we can all relate to.
That spirit of relatability permeates all of the material on their upcoming album. They say that their music crosses over into multiple genres, but they want all of their songs to cover subjects that are relevant to their generation.
I feel like we're aiming, I guess theme-wise, towards something, I don't know if this really explains it, but towards something that our peers can identify with, like things that they've probably thought or have experienced.
Things like not feeling safe in the world. Sudan explains.
We're Black, so of course it's like in our face all the time. Like you see a policeman, you get nervous. You see a car, like you get nervous. It's just like, I feel like a lot of people aren't aware of that feeling all the time. So they don't understand like how important it is and how scary it could be just like getting pulled over for speeding. Like little things like that, people need to be more aware.
We definitely have songs where we address the topic and, you know, talk about it. But for, it doesn't really change too much of like how I feel when I step outside. It's like very hard to feel like you can affect that. But the music definitely helps as an outlet to express the feelings behind it.
Playing in a band together has helped the Jax siblings thrive while growing up in East Oakland. They're hard at work, literally living in their recording studio. Jax the band is committed to pursuing a full-time career in music, and if their journey so far is any indication, they're well on their way. In East Oakland, I'm Tony DeKeepa for Cross Currents.
Jax's debut album is called The Glow Up. Tony DeKeepa reported that story in collaboration with Oakland Voices, an award-winning community journalism project that trains East Bay residents to tell stories about their neighborhoods. True Quinn produced that story. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we're going to Solano State Prison in Vacaville for a story from the team of Uncuffed.
From Solano State Prison,
this is Uncuffed.
Today's story is about yoga on the yard. Here's Uncuffed producer Spoon Jackson.
Gordon Melvin was attracted to a life of dope and drink. He was violent with others and himself. He started watching Priscilla, a yoga guru, on KQED PBS. You'd think that would help, but he was violent with yoga too, practicing it in a violent manner in his cell. I talked to him about how he turned away from violence to become a yoga teacher, leading classes on the yard.
Inhale, expand upwards. Exhale, forward fold. Inhale, halfway lift, hands on shins. Exhale, hands to the floor, stepping all the way back.
It's important to take deep breaths when you do yoga, right?
Absolutely.
So it's important to take deep breaths now, right?
Absolutely. My name is Gordon Alexander Melvin.
Thank you.
And I am Canadian, incarcerated in California.
How long?
23 years right now. Okay.
So how did you get started in doing yoga?
I got started about 2003, where I'd just been involved in another riot, and that was on over here on what used to be called One Yard. It's A Yard now.
Yeah.
So we're locked down again. And I was tired. beat up. My back was messed up, and one time after an alarm on the yard, I had to roll over on my stomach, do a push-up to get up. Mm. I couldn't stand straight up. And somebody told me, oh, you got tight hamstrings. And me being me, I thought, this guy's a nut. Mm-hmm. What's tight hamstrings got to do with a sore back? But I never forgot what he said. And so when I started with Priscilla, I started noticing a little benefit. My back wasn't quite as sore. My hamstrings weren't as tight. I could bend over and touch my shins. Prior to that, I could barely touch my knees. Even though I was using substances, I was still messing around with yoga, and I hurt myself more than I helped myself.
Yeah, so yoga is a powerful exercise, but at the same time, it's tender, and you be gentle to your body as you doing the stretches and stuff. That's what you said?
First precept of yoga is ahimsa, nonviolence. Mm-hmm. And I was not practicing nonviolence.
What do you mean?
I was violent with myself and still, drugs, substances. The way I practiced yoga, I was still involved in fights. I was still got involved in a couple more riots. And then 2006, one morning I was done. I was so disgusted with myself. It was either change or kill myself. You want to do another one? Inhale up. Exhale, forward fold. Inhale, halfway lift. Exhale, those hands down, stepping all the way back, all the way down. And I went back to the hole, another shoe term, and really dedicated myself at that point, because in that dummy cage, that time, I realized that I got no joy out of physical violence anymore.
Yeah.
And the mental violence was draining me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really got into this, the precepts. It was almost like a monkish existence. When I finally agreed to doing Downward Dog in public, we just did here.
Yeah, yeah.
It was under the TV in the day room.
Under the TV in the day room in a prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That was quite enlightening.
It was just two of y'all?
At this beginning, yeah.
What kind of looks you were getting?
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Overcoming self-conscious, that's one of the biggest fights we have within ourselves.
Yeah.
It's all about us, right? People are looking at us. People are looking at us. But the thing is, in a room full of people doing Down Dog, no one's looking at you.
Yeah, and being in a prison is even more, everything is 10 times magnified. They see a bunch of guys with the ass in the air. Yeah. And some guys say, well, that's not kosher. That's not cool. That's not, to have your ass in the air in a prison. But the more enlightened, the more aware people, the more people that take into their growing and becoming a richer human being going to say, well, I'll try it, and then if I get benefits from it, I'll keep doing it.
Kim Young, she was associate warden here at the time.
Yeah.
She was a big-time yogi. She started supporting us, and then she put together this cancer walk. I believe it was 2011 or 2012.
Yeah.
And asked us if we'd do it on the yard.
If you would do what?
Perform yoga in the yard.
Yeah.
Run a yoga sequence.
And where does she want you to do this yoga?
We ended up doing it on the handball court, and that was just the coolest experience. 30 guys from all different cliques and gangs.
Yeah, black, white, Mexican.
Everybody, yeah, doing yoga on the handball court. That
United
day.
Nations all with their ass in there.
And right then I realized that yoga was an equalizer. Everybody was equal.
I want to take yoga. I got somebody I'm want to teach it to me, but I'm not ready to put my ass in the air yet.
Thumbs to heart center. Inhale, expand upwards. Exhale, forward fold. Inhale, halfway lift, hands on shins. Exhale, hands to the floor, stepping all the way back and coming all the way down. Inhale, up into cobra. Exhale, down dog.
Boone Jackson is a producer in KELW's radio program at Solano State Prison. He spoke with Gordon Melvin, and since they talked, Gordon has paroled. Uncuffed is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability. All content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories at kelw.org/uncuffed. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.